No, 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 not for public consumption.
My, definitely not. This is my popcorn. So anyway, this is Freedom Fiends broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aureus by one-year synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 bazillion degrees height of Fahrenheit. To keep a sinful flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Phil and Jeremy? Can you feel it?
I'm pretty sure my brain's fried at that temperature or frozen, so I'm not sure if I feel anything, but yeah.
It's one or the other. You're not sure which, but you know it's one of them.
Yes, something is happening, so we'll go with yes, I feel something.
Yeah, yes. There's a meme, and it shows, and this is because of somebody wrote in here saying, Lou's saying it wrong. He's saying it the way they used to say it before the 1964 reformation at Vatican I or whatever it was.
What?
For climatology. But anyway, so there's this meme, and it's doing a comparison of the different temperatures, and it's like 0 degrees Fahrenheit and 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's explaining, here's where freezing is, and blah blah blah, and then for Celsius it shows 0 degrees is freezing, and then 100 degrees is boiling because that's 212 degrees Fahrenheit, and then it goes down to was it Kelvin, and for 0 and 100 it says dead. So I actually have no idea what the ratio is on Kelvin, but anyway, I imagine it's pretty extreme if you're dead at 100 degrees Kelvin.
Well, the ratio is the same. It's just translated. Because Kelvin is the same. It's the same scale as Celsius. It's just like on way zero is way further left than zero Celsius.
Okay, all right, so it's not zero Celsius equals zero Kelvin.
Right, yeah, zero Kelvin is supposed to be like, I think it's like the lowest temperature you can get in the universe or something, like something really ridiculous.
Oh, it's like the dark side of Pluto.
Right.
Where at that temperature, everything will freeze, including time. And
yeah, it's something ridiculous.
He was stuck in an infinite loop, kind of like when Ant-Man shrunk. And
so, in other words, it's colder than Hillary Clinton's heart.
Yes,
I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, nice.
And Hillary Clinton is a liar, a socialist, and her pantsuit stinks.
Oh gosh, does it stink?
And Donald Trump is a liar, a socialist, and his toupee stinks
like burnt steak.
Yeah. Like bacon cooked in the oven. My God.
Oh, that is wrong. Bacon cooked in the oven smells just as delicious as bacon cooked on the stove.
It actually has a slightly different taste.
Slightly different taste, but it smells the same.
it tastes better when it's done in cast iron.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. So the whole bacon war again.
Go grab your girlfriend. Put her on the air. We're going to fight this out.
I do not enter the bacon wars with you guys. You guys can have fun with that. I will make my bacon the way I like it. And
your girlfriend's my POW. Her and Paul. They lost the war, but they keep trying to do like some sort of insurgency in my bacon POW camp.
Oh.
Yeah. By the way, they eat thin sliced generic turkey bacon cooked in
That's just those are fighting words right there. That's just wrong, man. Although sadly, I actually did used to eat that stuff when I thought I was being healthy. Yeah, it was a dark time in my life.
I tried it a couple times because I did like turkey burgers, so I'm like, hey, let's give this a shot. And no,
yeah,
not so much.
I found one brand that was tolerable, but it never was anything close to, of course, nice piece of pork bacon and all.
I didn't even like the Trader Joe's stuff. It reminded, it looked like bologna. it tasted like tough bologna. It's like you morph the texture of a hard salami into a bologna and squeeze the taste out of it.
Yeah, that's just not appetizing at all.
Atrocious.
So that anyway.
Sounds like.
Go ahead, Phil. Continue.
I said that sounds like it would taste almost as bad as Kratom.
You have a Kratom story. Tell us. Enlighten us.
Oh, well, I have a friend who recently discovered Kratom.
Is his name Cash Newman?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's go with that.
But he found out the hard way that it tastes essentially like concentrated powdered butthole. And he tried to mix it with Mountain Dew Code Red, and it congealed at the top. In a very, you know, and of course, being
gel, like paste type thing.
I don't.
Do you
know,
have to actually. Eat it with a spoon. I mean,
is there scientific explanation for this?
The carbonation. This I mean, or is it Code Red specifically?
It was the carbon. Yeah, it was the. Well, yeah. I mean, he hasn't tried it with anything else, but he tried to mix it with Code Red, and the carbonation brought all of the kratom powder up to the top. So he scooped it all into his mouth with a spoon, and he called me up and told me, "Do not mix this with Code Red ever in your life."
Well, you know, at least
was
he was willing to give.
Stopping you.
Yeah. Okay. Which would you have thought it was a good idea if had he not told you that, I think is what Lou's getting at.
Well, I think personally I think Code Red tastes like concentrated butthole anyway, so yeah.
See, I try not to drink soda that much anymore, although I did have one at dinner tonight because, well, I went out for sushi. It's been so long since I had sushi and it was delicious, but that's besides the point. But I actually never really minded Code Red, although I liked regular Mountain Dew a little too much for a while, so maybe that's why. But
I like the Code Red, but mm-hmm. I prefer the Live Wire because it tastes like orange jelly beans.
See, I don't think I ever tried that one, and I'm not the biggest fan of jelly beans either. Jelly Belly, what is it, the Jelly Belly bean? Yeah, those ones. Those ones I like. Regular jelly beans, not a fan. Never have been.
My God.
I've never been a fan of jelly beans either. But strangely, I do like Live Wire.
What is wrong with you, Jeremy? My God.
I don't know.
Were you dropped on your head as a puppy?
Actually, yes. I think at least once. And then I also fell down a very steep set of stairs at the age of 2.
And 3 and 4.
And No. It wasn't until 5 I put my head through a plate glass window. Yeah, that was a rough start. I'm pretty sure there's a little bit of jogging going on in my head that has prevented me from liking the things that apparently everybody else likes. I don't know.
I love jelly beans. Jelly beans are good.
I mean, I'll eat some of them, but like I said, once the Jelly Bellies came around, now those I can get behind, you know, with all those different flavor combinations. And
I didn't know there were jelly beans other than Jelly Bellies or jelly. What did you say?
The Jelly Bellies. Yeah, I'm just talking about
a big jelly bean like connoisseur, so.
Oh, I'm just talking about like the regular little jelly beans that you find that are just like, you know, the different colors that they're like grape or cherry or whatever they're supposed to be, although they don't usually taste necessarily like that. And the black ones are the licorice ones, which are just disgusting because the taste of licorice just makes me physically nauseous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Had the same reaction to it myself.
So, yeah. Not a big fan.
I like the old school original jelly beans, like the, I think Brock's is a pretty popular brand. I can't think of any.
Yeah, I remember those.
The Jelly Bellies aren't too bad, but I try to kick it old school a little bit, and I'm more in favor of the Brock's, particularly with the Reds. And what I'd really like to do is find a candy store where they sell, like, each color of jelly bean.
Individually.
Sorry about that. I'm having coffee fits, okay. So I'm hitting the dump. I'd like to find individual colors of jelly beans, like a bin of red jelly beans, and maybe I'll get like a bag of reds and a bag of oranges and maybe a couple of the other colors, you know, like a little mixture of those. But you know, yeah, it sounds like we're talking about speed back in the 80s. Yeah, give me some more reds.
I feel like such an innocent snowflake here, because I was thinking I thought it sounded like you were going to the Lego store and going to the individual Lego things where they have only that one kind of Lego piece and pouring that into the different bags. I'm a geek.
Well, see, wow. you want to talk about Vermont and Eve talking about speed and stuff. See, my advice was pixie sticks, and I wouldn't even more than half the time I wouldn't even bother opening the wrapper. I would just chew it. Like, I would eat pretty much paper and all. Paper, sugar, everything.
Yeah. I don't know. Wow, that's my fair share.
That's a Johnson.
Yes. Yes, it is. Well, because it used to be, you try to, open it up and you try to shake as much out. There'd always be something that would stuck inside, especially near the top where your mouth was, and it got a little wet. Always trying to get the last little bit of sugar out of there. So I learned pretty quickly that if I could just eat the darn paper, it would save me the trouble.
Yeah, screw it. I'm going for it.
So I would eat like half a bag of pixie sticks that way. Chewing on them.
So kind of like a trash panda getting into somebody's garbage, yes, trying to get it, yes, food that's wrapped up inside there. Just
almost exactly like it's almost exactly like that.
Wow. Did you do the same thing with the plastic ones?
No. I never took it that far, thankfully.
Yeah, those are a little chewier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes crunchy, depending upon the thickness of the plastic.
Yeah. Depends on how old it is.
So, murder dog is secretly a trash panda. Interesting.
The paradox. It's crazy.
Yeah. Do you have any other interesting yakky stuff that can cover about 40 seconds in this opening segment, Phil? We've never met before, or we've never spoken before.
Well, we can mention the festival again, because I am seriously upset that it's looking like I won't be able to make it. I was really kind of hoping to get a taste of your Assault Kitchen.
Well, maybe you'll find a way to weasel it out.
Yeah, hopefully.
Have you thought about man whoring?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure I could only command about $100 for that.
Then you just have to hustle a little bit. You have time.
You best get out there and start peddling man booty.
Yeah.
Peddling man booty. Hey, there's a title for you.
Hi, I'm Lou. I'm a recovering statist. Nice to meet you, Phil. We'll be back.
Oh, nice to meet you too, Lou. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media is not easy, but it is effective. Making the world a better place with Great Liberty Media doesn't even pay very much at all. Sometimes we even have to pay out of our own pockets. But we do it because we have to. For you. And for the children. Here at the Freedom Fiends, we've been producing amazing and effective Liberty Media every day since 2011. Radio shows, podcasts, movies, music, cryptocurrencies, and yes, even memes. The Freedom Fiends also run the world's only Liberty Media Teaching Hospital and the world's only voluntarist media university. Our hands-on classes educate and shape hundreds of the great Liberty speakers of today and tomorrow, and they in turn will teach and inspire others. Heck, even the ones who got fired or quit in a huff still hold useful skills and equipment to hone their own Liberty Media and teach others. Freedom Fiends Media and our students' media is a rising groundswell to help create happy Liberty lives around the world and maybe even on to Alpha Centauri. Kitty cats and puppies like living in Liberty homes more than in statist homes. So please donate to the Freedom Fiends, if only for the kitties. Hashtag please donate Freedom Fiends. Think of the kitties.
Here's the deal. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, I got the crud that's going around up here, and I don't know how it is where you guys live. There's I have like a cold, but it's more than just a cold. It's like a weapons grade cold. I have the government flu.
Oh no, not the government flu, Lou.
Yeah, I am in my third week of this crap right now already.
Wow.
So I'm still coughing. Like I didn't cough this bad when I was a smoker.
That's well, you never really cough that bad when you're a smoker. It's when you're trying to quit that you really cough, right? But no, I know mm-hmm. what you mean. That's bad.
No, I cough pretty bad before I quit, and that's part of the reason why I did quit. But yeah, and this thing, I was talking to one of the doctors in the hospital that I work at, and I guess you can, if you have it, you can expect to have it anywhere from like 4 to 6 weeks.
The wow. coughing.
So I might have to bite the bullet and go get some antibiotics.
Maybe, so, just maybe.
So,
well, you're already halfway there, Lou. 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah,
you're at least halfway there. I mean, come on.
Which, by the way, I haven't had coffee in almost 3 full weeks now.
Wow.
Because I've been drinking tea.
See, now that's interesting, because that actually happened to me. I was sick back in January, and I was actually Melissa actually convinced me to try a bunch of stuff, including some different teas to get me over, because I was pretty bad for a couple of weeks, and I stopped drinking coffee because it was much easier to drink the tea, and the tea was making me feel better. And I actually haven't gone back. Like, I've probably had less than a dozen cups of coffee since then. Probably less than 10, maybe even less than that, which is a lot, is very little amount of coffee for me in an almost 3 month span. But I don't know, man.
Yeah, I usually drink more coffee on accident during the course of a day than most people do trying. So if you go almost 3
How weeks, do you accidentally drink coffee, Lou?
It just happens.
It just happens.
I'm walking down the hallway, I slip and fall and land on the ground, and coffee appears in my mouth or something. I don't know. But anyway, I've been doing the tea with the lemon and everything. And
yeah, I'm sorry to honey and lemon. Honey yeah. and lemon is the way to go.
You know, lemon tea with honey. That makes it even easier.
Well, yeah.
And also some other herbal stuff. But anyway, so here's the thing. If I'm talking and then all of a sudden I stop and it doesn't sound like my usual space out type deal where I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to say or just stammering or whatever.
You're coughing. Jump in. Gotcha.
Yeah. So if you hear me strain, just jump in there so we don't get the buzzer. So I'm gonna try and do what
just
I can.
Just one time I want to get the buzzer. Going. Just one time.
The buzzer.
I've actually seen it happen.
Oh, you don't know about the buzzer, Phil? There's a six.
I don't know about the buzzer.
6 seconds. If we have if there's radio silence for 6 seconds, alarms go off.
Oh wow.
What that means is our words are so important that if there's 6 seconds without one of us dropping bad scientists upon the listeners out there, that alarms will go off, phones will start ringing, people will get woken up in the middle of the night to make sure that we start
cats and dogs living together.
Start dropping more bad scientists again. Yeah.
Wow. I feel so special and important.
You should.
Yeah. Well, maybe not for you. It's mostly for me and Jeremy because you're so new. I'm yeah, teasing.
There's seniority involved.
Yeah, that Jeremy's not included.
That hurts.
Wait a minute.
But I've actually seen the buzzer go off and all the lights go down. The red lights come on like you're going to battle stations and everything. And as a matter of fact, they got the little strobe light going and board ops are running around back and forth, pushing the studio dog out of the way and trying to.
Where's the jazz sure music? Where's going. The jazz music?
Yeah,
jazz on jazz.
Something like that, yeah.
One of my favorite segments of the show that we ever did.
Quick, play that song by John Cage. At however many minutes and however many seconds. It's like a full thing of just nothing but silence. And it's a
yes.
geeky music joke. Never mind.
Gotcha. Over my head.
It's like 12 minutes and 45 seconds or something like that is the name. And the entire piece is just him sitting at a piano doing nothing. And it's silence. And he actually he used to perform this in front of a in front of an audience. And what he would do is he would sit down in front of a piano. He would open the piano and sit for the full time span and do nothing. Yeah.
Wow.
Just like sit there staring off into the distance.
What do you
He would bob his head like he was counting to the beat.
Oh. Not even moving his hands, though? Not
George
even pretending?
W. Bush impersonation. We'll be back.
Air piano right. or something?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Cock-a-doodle-woo. Freedom Fiends. And we are back. And we're actually going to start talking about real subjects now, half an hour into the show.
Very nice. Oh, by the way.
And if you insist.
Yeah, I do want to point out the, I looked it up. It was 4 minutes 33 seconds, the John Cage song. I just wanted to get that out before somebody rode me for it later.
What did you say, like 12 minutes or something like that?
No, I said like 2:45 or something.
Oh, okay. Is it even longer? So, wow, I thought you said 12.
Yeah. Now 4 minutes, 33 seconds.
Wait, who's John Cage? Do I care?
Johnny
Probably
Cage?
Not. No, John.
Mortal Kombat?
John Milton Cage Jr. He was an American composer. He was an avant-garde music guy.
Ah, that explains it.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying is he sucks. All right. Anyway.
Yes.
So onto our main story of the night. A lot of people will write an open letter to a politician or some sort of government goon that thinks he's an official. And I'm going to do an open radio show to Commander Clay Hammond.
Hear, hear.
Of the Shelby County Drug Enforcement Task Force. And I'm guessing that this is in Tennessee. It doesn't show where exactly the geographical location of his thiefdom is. But anyway, so recently, for those of you that peruse around Facebook, you'll see these different police departments going and putting up their, you know, kind of like hunters will show the deer that they shoot. Well, the cops will show all the money and cannabis and other things that they steal from people, and, you know, because they're showing it off, and because, you know, that's what they do. They have to try and justify their existence. So the typical response of this would be, I'm picking one at random here. Legalizing drugs makes them uncool, so less people will abuse them after a few years because drug use will go back to being what losers do instead of cash money rap gangsters. Sort of true. Not put very well. Point number two, legalizing drugs gets rid of the black market and money violence that goes with it. Three, busting street users and small-time dealers accomplishes nothing but ruining people's lives and extorting money out of them. And by the way, this is not one of my Facebook friends, at least not that I know of. Nope, he's not. And then number four, if you actually want to make a difference and save lives, go arrest the Congress members that are always high on drugs, spend taxpayer money on blow and hookers, blah, 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 blah. So, okay, I could have read the whole thing because I wouldn't have to redact any of the words on there. But the typical language that's used on these posts in the comments of people who usually tend to be my friends would be, hey, you parasitic welfare bandits, and, you know, other nonsense like that. I'll say things like, hey, if you're gonna go to war with a plant, why not poison ivy? And then and then people come to their senses and say, oh wait, no, we don't want to see poison ivy become rampant and all of a sudden have a street value. So anyway, many of these police departments have taken down their Facebook pages. It's not enough for them to take down the posts anymore because they just get absolutely barraged. They get torn apart by just an onslaught of really nasty comments, calling them what they are, welfare parasites and such, and pointing out that they're ruining people's lives. So this particular one, and this story comes to us from ABC3340.com. So, like I said, I think this is in Tennessee or maybe off of Centauri on channel 3340. But anyway, the Shelby County Drug Enforcement Task Force is fighting back against people trolling them on social media. Can you show us on the doll where the Facebook comments touched you, Commander Hammock? They say people are posting misleading information on their Facebook about drug use. We receive a bombardment of comments from folks who are quite zealous for the legalization of recreational marijuana use, Commander Clay Hammock said. One person posted on their Facebook, "It's a plant. Legalize it and stay the expletive deleted out of people's business," which I think is a fair comment. There's a lot of misinformation that we know, and they are putting out there through our channels, Commander Hammock says. Now, quite frankly, he's really repeating a lot of BS lies, slogans, talking points, and other nonsense that's used to rationalize the war on drugs. And I can't really blame you, Commander Hammock, and I hate to quote a socialist here, but this will be quite fitting. Never expect a man to do the right thing when his salary depends upon him doing the wrong thing. Yes, you, Commander Hammock. Yes, you and your gang of goons. So he decided to bring some truth to the discussion. I've seen his comments. No, he didn't. The point of this video really was to give us an opportunity and a platform to share with the public some facts, really, Commander Hammock said.
Facts. Alternative facts, maybe.
Yeah. Or actually, he's gonna deliver some fake news. Another person asked, "How many death notices have you delivered due to marijuana?" The task force wrote, "Absolutely zero. However, you do know drug dealers carry guns, right?" So do cops, and they have to protect
themselves from people like you, Commander.
Yeah. Cops are a lot more dangerous than drug dealers because, for the most part, drug dealers don't mess with the common man.
Yeah, unless somebody tries to take their stuff like a cop would.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they're quite peaceful usually.
But drug dealers generally have a code. Stay away from the taxpaying citizen. You know, don't go killing those people because that's bad for business. I mean, it does sort of bring the cops down on them. You know, not that the cops are really good at solving crime or anything like that. You know, solving murders.
Well, to be good would assume that they actually try to solve crime.
Right. Well, if they can get some civil asset forfeiture revenue out of solving a drug homicide, then they might actually put some effort into it. But solving a rape case or something else that won't bring in civil asset forfeiture, they're probably not going to do a whole lot. But anyway, so the point of this video really was to give us an opportunity and a platform to share with the public some facts. We've never encountered a multi-tier criminal enterprise that's dealt exclusively marijuana, Commander Hammock said. Well, that's probably the case. And we'll get to some responses on that. So when they get post to their Facebook saying, "How about busting some heroin dealers and rid our streets of a real killer?" Their response, "You got it." Well, guess what? All right, I don't use any of these drugs. I don't smoke cigarettes. I rarely drink alcohol. And apparently, I'm not even drinking coffee anymore. I'm drinking this decaffeinated herbal tea. I am 100% opposed to the war on drugs. I am 100% opposed to the criminalization of heroin, kratom, crocodile, and anything under the sun. And the reason is because prohibition creates the problems that he's complaining about. So, Commander Hammock, when you complain about the violence that goes along with the illicit drug trade, you have to say, well, why is that? Because it's an illicit drug trade, moron.
Yeah, it's nobody ever seems to get the lessons from history that we had from prohibition in the first place, because that's really all this is. The prohibition of alcohol was proof that the prohibition is what caused the criminal activity. And they pretend like, oh, this isn't going to happen if we prohibit something that's legal. Oh no, marijuana is inherently violent and is inherently circled with violence. Of course, it's not that we're actually creating a black market by by essentially delegitimizing these people's course of action to defend themselves if they're robbed or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's completely bonkers how willfully ignorant people are about how to about what actually causes these things.
Well, like I said, his salary depends upon him doing the wrong thing, so
yeah, which
can't
I think
be overly surprised.
Well, yeah, because I was gonna say I think for some of them they may be willfully ignorant, but I think a lot of them are quite aware that they're actually lying and that they're just doing it because their job depends on it. Yeah. And so it's not even ignorance at that point. It's actually deception, and you know, just
I wouldn't
being
be
a,
too
being
surprised
a real
if
butthole, basically.
I wouldn't be too surprised if Mr. Benander Hammock, I mean, Commander Hammock, was one of those guys.
Well, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's a true believer and he just doesn't know any better. Okay, I'm going to be nice about it. I'm going to give him a chance and think that maybe that's it. But what I am going to do is I want to drop a little bit of mad scientist on him, and maybe he can answer some of these questions, because I'm going to post this episode to their Facebook page after it posts, and I'm going to put some questions in there for him. So the first question is, if the marijuana trade is inherently violent, can you tell me how many gangland rubouts there were over the marijuana trade prior to Prohibition? I'm going to go with zero. If alcohol was inherently violent and created violence, why did that violence only occur during Prohibition instead of before Prohibition or after Prohibition? So, Commander Hammock, as somebody who probably studies criminology and looks at statistics and everything, you would probably know that... Oh, gosh. Probably the murder rate doubled during Prohibition, roughly.
Yeah.
And then after Prohibition was ended, it immediately went right back to where it was. Because outside of serial killers, crimes of passion, and other stuff, you really don't have a whole lot of naturally occurring homicide. You don't have people shooting each up over legal things. Like the alcohol trade, you don't have the St. Valentine's Day massacre outside of Prohibition. It's only during Prohibition.
Usually, and, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And now, if it's the drugs, then, you know, there would have been rubouts before marijuana was criminalized.
Yep.
There would have been rubouts before heroin and every other narcotic was criminalized. But that doesn't happen. So you're going to have to explain why it only exists around Prohibition. And we'll be back after this trip to the market to
Normies,
go a little bit further.
Normies, explain yourselves.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny. DJ, how do you like the fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers, and there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
Well,
so anyway, we are back, and we're doing an open radio show to Commander Hammock of the
Commander Hammock
Shelby. Well, let's be nice here. Let's be somewhat proper, of the Shelby County Drug Enforcement Task Force. So anyway, when we left, we were talking about why don't you have turf wars and gangland rubouts over the alcohol trade when it's not illegal. Did alcohol just make people go crazy during that time it was illegal? Is that what it was? Is that when demon rum really came into its own and really demonized and made people into the devil and all that other stuff? And then once it was legalized again, and once the government, you know, said, "Oh, it's not so bad. Pay the tax on it." Is that when it ceased to be evil? And then cannabis before it was outlawed, and heroin before it was outlawed. No drug wars, no turf battles, none of this other stuff. Let's look at some other things, because that's drugs and alcohol. People can say, well, that's mind-altering. If you look at the Civil War blockade, the Union blockading the South, once again, you had illicit markets because obviously you have a blockade. It's not an outright prohibition, but it is it's an impediment to trade. It's keeping the normal flow of things from moving. So it's really a supply and demand. So you have... It started out originally with different commodities, not necessarily the staple products, not necessarily the food and medicine and things that people need to survive, but it was more the luxury things. So you have these smugglers that are running, trying to get through the blockades with all these fancy commodities and consumer goods. And then as the reserves for food and all this other stuff start to dry up, that's when you start seeing all these staple goods become the new commodities that are part of this illicit market, and all of a sudden the prices on those go up. And yes, you have violence over the illicit market. So it's actually the illicit market that causes these things. If you go to Eastern Europe back during the days of the Iron Curtain, the Warsaw Pact nations, you had a lot of West German appliances, a lot of consumer goods that were smuggled in, and once again, you had violence. So are toasters evil? Do West German toasters cause violence? Does it cause people to lose their mind and go do gangland rubouts? No. Socialism does. And quite frankly, the drug war is rather socialistic. But what you have is an impediment in the market. So in our words, you have the government stomping out a capitalistic type business venture and creating a socialistic situation. You have a sharp decrease in the supply while demand remains unchanged. Therefore, the price goes artificially high. Now, I'm going to go to an actual economics book here, and this is a good one. It's called Lessons for the Young Economist. It's by Dr. Robert P. Murphy. And chapter 20 talks about the war on drugs. And this isn't the only economics book that explains why the drug war has done what it has done. There's many of them out there. As a matter of fact, Milton Friedman, who's not exactly a staunch libertarian, predicted with amazing accuracy in the early 80s what would happen out of the new war on drugs that Reagan was ramping up. And then also when Nixon launched it back in, what was it, 72 or 73?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, the police are at war with an unarmed plant, and the unarmed plant is still winning. So, anyway, drug prohibition fosters violence. Everyone knows that the illegal drug trade is plagued by excessive violence, often in the form of gang warfare. Worse still, innocent bystanders are often killed as collateral damage from turf battles between rival drug dealers. The casual observer might conclude that the drugs such as cocaine and heroin are intrinsically bad and go hand in hand with violence. I'm going to give the commander the benefit of the doubt that he believes this fake news, this myth, misinformation, alternative facts. Yet this explanation is wrong. Both economic theory and American history demonstrate that drug prohibition causes violence, not drugs per se. And because we're getting ready to go out for the break to the second hour, I'm going to do a very quick thing here. Because the cost is artificially inflated, and I'm not talking about a simple markup of 10%, I'm talking about sky-high price increases. That creates an incentive to use violence to maintain the territory that exists and obtain new territory. These artificially high profit motives, the profit margins, will bring in the least reputable of society. So the war on drugs should actually be called No Cartel Left Behind, just like the war on alcohol should have been called No Al Capone Left Behind. So yeah, you guys are creating the problem. You are making it worse. You are doing the wrong thing, Commander Hammock and all your buddies.
When the final element is released, it's not because I need to know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed,
Buy Sheep for Sheep on Jeep,
and Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says,
Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, then gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, then gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big, but now we're small. If a retro thief, they gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big, but now we're small. If a retro thief, they gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big, but now we're small. If a retro thief, they gotta collect them all.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And we are back. So the last half hour, the first hour. So if you're just tuning in, if you're on one of the stations that doesn't carry us for the first hour, you'll want to go to freedomfiends.com and check out the first hour of the episode. If you want, you can go past the 15-minute conversation about sugar and candy. you might enjoy it. But we are talking about a police commander who is upset about people trolling his drug enforcement unit, his task force, for the marijuana bus. And this comes to us from ABC3340.com. It's a Shelby County Drug Enforcement Task Force, and they're mad that people are calling them nasty names for busting people with pot and everything else.
Well, he's claiming that they're spreading lies, even though from what I read, it seems to be that they're spreading the truth. But maybe that's just me. I don't know.
So we just got done explaining how the drug war actually creates the violence that this guy's complaining about, that he's attributing to the drugs themselves. Just like people attribute violence to guns rather than the people using them, the prohibition is actually the cause of the drug violence, just like it was for alcohol, just like it was for consumer goods the old Eastern Bloc countries. As a matter of fact, there was a lot of violence over the literature market, the illicit literature market. Now, you're probably thinking that is the really heavy-duty, hardcore porn that wasn't allowed by the morally upright communist commissars. No, it was actually American literature freedom type stuff. Nothing that Solzhenitsyn Neeson would have written. But anyway, so this guy, Commander Clay Hammock, he's making a lot of very wrong claims. Let's see now. A lot of the marijuana networks that we are in contact with are often involved with violent crime. Very rarely do we take down a marijuana distribution channel and not encounter a large amount of guns, heavy firepower, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, we've already explained that. The prohibition has created the illicit market, which has created a violent illicit market. So that's why you're running into the drugs and the heavy firepower, or the guns and heavy firepower. You guys built that.
What bothers me is the assumption that heavy firepower is a bad thing to begin with.
Right. Right. I mean, everybody should have heavy firepower, or actually what they consider to be heavy firepower. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, let's, you know, some of the different comments. And he says, oh, yeah. And for those who openly admit to using illegal drugs, like one person saying they've been smoking for 40 plus years in almost every state, the response is the task force wants to hang out.
Really. Oh, how cute.
Now, he's pointing out the illegality of it. And I've always said that illegal means because some politician said, no, you can't do that. So let me ask you, Commander Hammock, which crimes or which laws are you going to refuse to enforce? If you were a cop during the segregation era, would you enforce the segregation laws, Commander Hammock? Would you? How about if those segregation laws came back? Let's say that everything that people fear about Trump is absolutely true, and he turns this into a complete fascist dictatorship where they're rounding people up because of race or religion. You know, every single scare tactic of the left. Let's say that every last one of these things was true, and everybody just went crazy, and they started passing all these laws, you know, kind of like the racial purity laws that they had in Germany, which also existed here in the U.S. at the time. Would you enforce those laws, Commander Hammock? Because it is the law, right? Would you? Would you capture escaped slaves under the fugitive slave laws, which specifically are in chapter, was it Article 4, Section 2, Clause 3 of the U.S. Constitution? Would you, if you encountered an escaped slave, if you were a cop back then, would you turn them over? Because it is the law.
Well, that's See, not comparable, Lou, because, you know, that was just a different time, and everybody was doing it. It's just a culture, Lou. You just don't understand.
Okay. Well, you know what? You know, Hitler having people rounded up because of the religion or because they were a threat to the state. Well, that was just a different time. Yeah.
That's just wrong, Lou, because America.
Yeah. People that were committing economic crimes in the Soviet Union, I mean, that was just a different era. You know, Khrushchev, Stalin, Lenin, Brezhnev, and all the ones that died a couple months into office. You know, it was a different time. They were just doing their jobs. What did they say at the Nuremberg trials? Befehl ist Befehl. Orders are orders. Just following orders. Just doing my job. Yep. So, oh, by the way, when exactly did slavery go from being completely acceptable to repugnant? And how did it change over?
Once they changed the laws, Lou.
It was all Abraham Lincoln.
He freed them all by himself, too. Well, Super Abe.
Well, does that mean that prior to the ratification of the 13th Amendment, when slavery was mostly outlawed, does that mean that the abolitionists were wrong? Because if it's legal, it must be right.
Well, yeah, correct. to the bulk of those people, unfortunately, yeah, that's kind of the joke I was making before. But it's the same reality is it's not funny because it's true.
You know how many guns those abolitionists had?
Not that.
So the people that did harbor escaped slaves, they were bad people too, right? Because they were breaking the law. Yeah, they deserve to go to jail.
Well,
business owners that served the wrong colored people at their lunch counter or in their stores, they were breaking the laws, and that wasn't that long ago.
Nope.
So were they bad people for breaking the law? Commander Hammock, would you enforce those laws just because some politician told you to do so and you would just blindly obey like a good little German?
Well, where is he from? Tennessee? Against black people? Possibly. I don't know.
I don't know. It's been a long time since I've been to Tennessee. But here's the question. Does legality equal morality? I say no, it doesn't. And I say that somebody who's more concerned about obedience to government than actual freedom and even if you take the freedom element out of it, the war on drugs is an absolute disaster. Just like prohibition, it didn't stop people from drinking alcohol. The war on drugs hasn't stopped people from doing drugs. I'm talking about all the drugs. I'm talking about pot. I'm talking about heroin, cocaine, the crap that I can't even pronounce. All that stuff is still being done. So the war on drugs has not stopped it. And to top it off, it has also created all the violence that goes along with it, the gangland rubouts. And here's something else for you, Commander Hammock. I know that you coppers like to cry about the war on cops. Well, there is a war on cops in a unarmed plan is winning it. But you know when the most murders of cops happen? I'm not talking about when you guys, you know, have a heart attack from being too fat, trying to get out of a patrol car. I'm not talking about when you're trying to revenue generate somebody on the side of the road because they didn't use a blinker and they drove almost as bad as your officers do. You know, just because you need a little extra money. I'm talking about cops actually getting shot during no-knock raids and all that sort of stuff. The most dangerous year for cops, and I can't remember what year it was exactly. I believe it was in the 20s, maybe 29, something like that. I think there were over 300 cops that were murdered that year, and that was during Prohibition. And many of those murders were related to Prohibition itself. So if you care about officer safety, Commander Hammock, you probably want to get rid of this war on drugs because, one, you're not doing anything. You're making the world a more violent place, not just for the general public, but for yourself and for your officers. So if one of your cops gets killed just doing his job like a good little German, the fact that you guys keep doing this means that he actually committed suicide.
Yeah, right.
Well, you guys are making the world a worse place.
Yeah.
And you don't have to take my word for it. There's plenty of economics books out there that will explain all this stuff to you. It's basic Econ 101. It's so basic. Go ahead and jump in before I start coughing again.
It is basic, but I was going to say, this type of guy, this Commander Hammock, seems like the type of guy that probably like bemoans somebody who does, because I think there was one situation where somebody was actually exonerated after they did shoot a cop during a no-knock raid, and he probably looks at that and thinks that's a travesty. Mm-hmm. That these people got away with killing one of the, because they were just doing their job. How dare they? You know, like, and that makes it all the worse. Like, that's how ridiculous it is. And I was saying this earlier. I don't know if it's necessarily ignorance on all of their parts. I think some of these drug warriors, as I refer to them, are doing it out of, like, they know what they're doing is essentially wrong, but they're just doing it anyway to, you know, keep their jobs or whatever it is. It's not even that they're ignorant of the fact that they're wrong and they're just doing their job. They're just saying, I don't care. I'm going to do my job anyway, regardless if it's wrong or not.
Well,
those ones are worse.
Yeah, that's part of the socialist aspect of it. The drug war is really just a jobs project. That's mm-hmm. what it is. And, you know, ain't nobody killing nobody for Robitussin.
Or lemon tea with honey.
Or lemon tea with honey. Or ginseng. You don't see any ginseng murders.
But you do see people getting arrested for picking ginseng out of season. We'll be back.
Oh, jeez.
Thanks, government.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends, and we are back with our open radio show to Commander Hammock. Last segment, we were talking about legality and everything else. Here's a question for you, Commander, and for your officers or deputies, whatever they are. Have you ever used cannabis in the past? Did you ever experiment around with it in high school? Have any of your deputies, have you ever done any illegal narcotics? If so, have you turned yourselves in to do your jail term and pay your debt to society? Have you?
Have I'm your guessing kids no. Doubtful.
Now, if you catch somebody's kid with weed, you know, they got a quarter ounce or something like that, you're probably going to take them to jail. Would you take your own kids to jail? Would you put them in the system? Would you testify? Would you collect the evidence and make sure that they got prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, like you would to somebody else's kid? Would you do that to your kids? Would your officers do that? Or would you look for a little professional courtesy if your kid got busted?
Yeah,
would you
think the latter?
Yeah, because that friends of the program type deal. Yeah, I'm sure that probably happens a little bit. Maybe you think so.
Well, I know it happens. I have friends who are cops, and I have friends' parents who were cops when I was growing up, and they always got that friendly, courtesy. And if they didn't, that became an issue. I remember that happening one time. My friend and I were getting harassed by some local cops because of somebody else who was in our group who hung out with us. And my friend's dad, who was like a detective in the NYPD, tried to go to these guys and was like, hey, can you, like, you know, kind of lay off my son and his friend? They're not really, you know, just because they this guy, they're not. And they basically spit in my friend's dad's face, and he got really ticked off and went over their head to their captain and stuff, and got them in a lot of trouble. And we were left alone after that. But it was, yeah, so that normally happens.
Yeah, normally I used to hang out with some cops back in the old days. As a matter of fact, my fishing buddy was a cop, and it was funny. He'd get pulled over, and he just put his badge out the window, and sometimes the cop that pulled him over would walk all the way up and then say, all right, get out here, after getting a good look at the badge. I think one time, as soon as the guy saw the badge, he turned around and got in his cruiser and took off. But I remember my buddy was complaining because one of his rookies had written a ticket to a sheriff's deputy. So he says, oh, great. Now every cop from our city is going to be marked for writing this guy a ticket. It's funny how they have that selective enforcement. So this whole thing about, well, it's the law. It doesn't mean Richard. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. One other thing I was going to say, around here, the take it one step further, they have what is the closest thing to a physical get out of jail free card that I've ever seen. They have around the police forces around here what they call PBA cards, and which they're allowed to give out to, they're supposed to give out to only immediate family members, but somehow they manage to get extra ones that end up going to not so immediate family members, friends, business associates, friends
of family programs.
Which is great. But it's an actual physical card. Like, I used to have them. I had a couple clients who were cops, and they gave them to me, and it was great. It actually got me out of trouble a bunch of times. Totally a selective enforcement. And the law is complete BS.
Do you know what PBA stands for?
I don't know, Phil. What?
No, I was asking because I was just curious.
I forget what it, police benevolent some or something or other. I forget what the thing is. Association, perhaps. Maybe. No, that's something else. I don't know. I forget what it is, but that's just what they, you know, like I said, they used to hand them out, and I had clients, and or when my, you know, my friend's dad, who was the cop, he used to give them to us every, you know, give it to, it was, he would give them to his son, and he'd give him two extra ones to give to two of his, you know, his closest friends, and he got to choose who it was, and, you know, so it was always battling out to be really nice to him around that time so we could make sure you got the card that year, because...
Yeah, at least they're being obvious about their corruption.
Yeah, but again, they're obvious about it, like, it's no big deal. Like, of course we do this. Why wouldn't we do this? Why wouldn't we take care? And most people around here look at that as, well, why wouldn't they? Of course they should. They should be able to. They do such a great service. service. Their family should be protected, which is, you know, until one of their family runs, until one of the cops' family, you know, drunkenly runs over their kid, then all of a sudden the story changes. But with sadly, it's usually not until then.
Yeah, with all the money they benevolently deserve a pass here and there.
Speaking of corruption, we're going to talk about that when we come back from this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
We were talking about corruption and at the end of the last segment. Police corruption is not just a problem for Mexico. Once again, from Chapter 20 of Lessons for the Young Economist. By the way, Chapter 19 is Protectionist Tariffs and Quotas. This is a very good book. And you can get it online at zero cost in PDF format and put it to your Kindle or whatever those fancy readers are. But the interesting thing about corruption, and corruption was rampant in the prohibition of alcohol, particularly in Chicago, just as the war on drugs, aka No Cartel or Police Agency Left Behind, has made corruption rampant with cops and government officials. When you have that much money from the artificially high profit coming in, you have enough to pay protection money, and you do need to pay protection because every once in a while cops are going to be able to get in there and they actually disrupt things. So from what I understand, a lot of them will pay protection and inform on their competitors so that their competitors get busted and not them. But because it's necessary to have some assistance if you're of substantial size, and because there is enough extra revenue coming in from the artificially high profitability, drug dealers will hire police to be their mules and provide them information and look the other way as they ply their trades. Something else, when you look at these high security prisons, you got to wonder, how do drugs get inside there? Is government just so incompetent that they can't keep drugs out of their own prison? Or would that be the guards and other staff that are bringing the drugs into the prisons?
Well, to be fair, it could be either.
Yeah, it could be both. But
government is pretty incompetent.
Yeah, well, I have a tendency to lead towards a fair amount of corruption in there. Incompetence could only account for a certain amount. When you're dealing with something that's as controlled and restricted as a prison, you're only going to be able to work the incompetence angle so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, realistically, definitely rife with corruption in prisons with the guards and stuff. They're definitely bringing stuff in. And I think that's kind of common knowledge, too, mm-hmm. just that fact.
So here's excerpts from a 2008 news article about an FBI sting in the Chicago area. It illustrates the connection between drug enforcement and police corruption. 17 people, including 15 South Suburban police officers, have been charged in a federal probe of allegations that officers provided armed security for large-scale drug deals. The officers apparently thought they were protecting high-rolling drug dealers. It turned out they were actually FBI agents. All 17 were charged Tuesday with conspiracy to possess and distribute kilogram quantities of cocaine and/or heroin in 8 separate criminal complaints, unsealed following arrest early Tuesday, according to the release from the U.S. Attorney's Office. 10 sheriff's correctional officers, sworn personnel that worked the jails and lockups, have been charged with criminal conspiracy. The feds say the sheriff's office, along with 4 police officers from Harvey and 1 Chicago cop, were caught in an FBI sting. So this is looking like a completely separate incident. An undercover FBI agent was able to deal with not one, not two, but 15 different law enforcement officers who sold out their badge and agreed for money to help drug dealers do their business, said U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald. Prosecutors say the officers took up to $4,000 in payoffs to act as lookouts and protection when what they thought were big drug deals were going down. And it goes on and on and on, and there's numerous versions of this. So, yeah, if you want to have a corrupt police department, all you need to do is add some prohibition, a little war on drugs, a little war on alcohol, a little war on consumer commodities, West German appliances, because, you can move anything from West Germany into East Germany, and you can also get over into Russia and the other Soviet satellite states. Border guards were very capitalistic in those socialist countries, so you know, all the stuff had to come in, or a lot of the stuff had to come in from outside of the borders, particularly the West German appliances, because they're not making West German appliances in Moscow or any of the other places there. So you have all these border guards that are getting bribed to allow all the stuff in. And they refer to these things, to the illicit markets, as creeping capitalism. As a matter of fact, they were so opposed to it that they actually implemented the death penalty in certain cases of these economic crimes of selling things that were prohibited. You know, those evil toasters that made people do all kinds of crazy things, and those radios and evil toasters. That subversive literature, you know, stuff like The Grapes of Wrath or maybe A Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway. You know? So, yeah, prohibition always fails, always creates illicit markets. So, once again, Commander Hammock, you guys are causing more problems and you're solving none.
Yeah, man. Seriously. Well, like I said, I think a lot of these guys know that and they just keep trudging along anyway, which makes me hate them even more.
Yeah. Now, he talked about multi-tier organizations. So, and a lot of people say, okay, you can make the argument for legalizing cannabis because it's not as bad as the others. And, you know, maybe it should be, you know, legalized, taxed, and regulated, to which I say yes, no, and no. Yeah, it should be legalized. It should not be taxed or regulated because it's currently legalized, taxed, and regulated, so to speak. And what will happen is you'll still have cops that are enforcing the regulation. So SWAT teams are still going out. And as a matter of fact, here in Michigan, there's a big problem with them going after legal medical cannabis dispensaries. They're just going in there messing with them because they can, and they're going in and shaking them down for money and everything else. And, you know, there's really nothing that anybody can do because, well, these guys are the government and the people being shook down are not. So what you have is a situation of they can say, oh, well, you're violating this little rule here. Look at this little tiny microscopic fine print. You know, you're violating that rule, so therefore, you know, you have to give us all your money. So that's what you get out of regulation. Now, like I said, I don't approve of using heroin and all that other crap. If pot was legal, I still wouldn't use it. Probably the only way I'd use it if I had a medical condition to where it actually helped me. I mean, I don't like this stuff. So
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
To each his own. But anyway, so I support ending the war on drugs in its entirety. And if you guys hang it up right now, I'm willing to forego the Nuremberg trials for drug warriors. I can't speak for everybody else, but with this war on drugs, once again, you guys are creating a problem. And now when you look at the different things that, like, let's say the Mexican cartels are involved in prostitution and all this other stuff. And let's look at the mafia. Prior to the prohibition of alcohol, the mafia was doing gambling and things like that. They were running numbers, which, by the way, turned into the state lottery eventually. So it was illegal when Luciano and the guys were doing it. But when the state government was doing it, all of a sudden it became legal. You know, it was okay.
Of course.
So when you're looking at gambling, this is something that is private gambling is for the most part illegal unless you have some kind of special permission. So once again, you have an illicit market. If you look at prostitution is illegal. So once again, you have an illicit market. So these things aren't actually being created, you know, out of the drug trade. As a matter of fact, you have a lot of prostitution that goes with getting money to purchase drugs. You also have a lot of theft that goes along with purchasing drugs. And this is covered in that Lessons for the Young Economist chapter also. Because of the artificially high price of these drugs, people have to steal to feed their addiction. Now, if what's the old Freedom Fiends line? If all this stuff was legal, everything would be like 25 cents a dose. If you did not have such a high price, people would not need to steal as much merchandise to pay this stuff. Who knows? They might not even be able to steal, or they might not even need to steal the merchandise. But because you have a lot of stuff getting stolen, you now have an increase in supply of stolen goods, so the fences are going to pay less for it. There's less of a demand. So because they're getting less money for the stolen goods, they have to steal more goods. And then with the prostitution, you know, if you have a lot of prostitution going on, that drives down the price, and there has to be more prostitution for the purposes of getting this money to feed the habit. Now, the other thing is, well, all these drugs, you know, are gateways to everything else. No, not really. In reality, the only time that you have people going from cannabis to crack is if there's an actual shortage. Now, you don't have too many market shortages, a little bit here and there. Every once in a while, there's a big drug bust and things dry up for a while. And people that, for whatever reason or another, are smoking marijuana on a regular basis, they need to get more marijuana. Well, they don't have it available. So what do they do to get their high? Well, they go on to something harder. So once again, when you guys are actually successful, Commander Hammock, you guys push people into the harder drugs. Now,
even
let's talk. Go ahead.
Even if you do take the gateway drug theory seriously, even if you assume that it's true, which it's not.
You shouldn't, but go ahead.
Right. Since legalization, teen use of cannabis in Colorado, at least, has actually gone down. So if you really do believe that the gateway theory is true, then you would want to legalize because that would reduce teen use of cannabis and therefore reduce the gateway effect.
Well, something else, if you look at the states where cannabis has been legalized, you see a much lower usage of opiates.
Absolutely.
And currently prescription opiates are killing more people than street opiates. So The FDA approved legal stuff is more dangerous and killing more people than the illegal stuff. Now, one of the other things is people like to talk about you don't know what's in the street stuff, right? And that's because the illicit market creates an environment where people make gin out of a bathtub, or they're doing a meth lab out in the middle of nowhere. And quite frankly, meth might not even be a thing if it wasn't for the war on drugs. And we'll finish that up.
Seriously.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Freedom Fiends. All right, so I'm going to wrap up this open radio show to Commander Hammock. And the last thing I want to talk about is the types of drugs that are out there. As I mentioned, shortages in cannabis have actually led people to using cocaine and crack and some of the harder stuff. It's not necessarily I want the bigger high. I'm not going to say that doesn't happen at all, but for the most part, the gateway drug is a fallacy. It's all nonsense. So when you look at why do these stronger drugs wind up being out there, is it a part of market demand? Actually, no, it isn't. In many cases, one of the biggest complaints that potheads have is that they can't find dirt weed anymore. You know, the regular low-powered stuff that you smoke.
Who wants that stuff? Mellowed.
Well, if I were going to smoke weed, I certainly wouldn't touch the stuff that's out there now. My hair might fall out, for God's sakes. That's how strong it is.
I don't know about that.
My God, I can't even drink caffeinated tea anymore. Anyway, no, there's a lot of people out there, they don't want the super-powered stuff. They just want to get their little mellow on and all sort of stuff. I mean, the stuff today, from what I hear, you take one drag on that and it's like whoosh.
Yeah, I think anyway, the swag is useful for those who just want it to sleep.
Yeah. So why do you have all the stronger stuff? So if you have, and it's the same with alcohol. I'm going to do a comparison between alcohol and cannabis. When you have the high-powered cannabis, you can sell it for a lot more. You can also sell whiskey for a lot more than you can sell beer. If you have a 1,000 pounds of cannabis, that requires the same amount of energy and effort and risk to move 1,000 pounds of cannabis, whether it's dirt weed or the superpowered stuff. But because you can sell the superpowered stuff for a much higher price, that leads people to go for the much higher price because it's an economic incentive. And because you have a high risk if you get caught, whether it's dirt weed or the high power stuff, you know, if you're gonna run a risk, then you want to make it worth it. So the artificially high profitability actually incentivizes taking bigger risks. That's why you have the violence to maintain territory. So same thing with alcohol. If you have 1,000 bottles of beer and 1,000 bottles of whiskey, and you can sell the whiskey for 3 or 4 times as much as a beer, of course you're going to have whiskey. And that's why it was difficult to find beer during Prohibition. So you have people that used to drink beer that are now drinking hard liquor because that's what's available. So Prohibition creates stronger products, more dangerous products. People making gin in their bathtub and people going blind. And let's not forget about the government poisoning the alcohol supplies and killing a couple thousand people. But then again, they also sprayed paraquat on cannabis plants,
well,
which
listen,
also killed people.
Listen, Lou, you got to break a few eggs. You know,
how it goes. Okay. Well, way to quote Vladimir Lenin. So anyway, I want to thank you very much for making the world a worse place, for making the world a more dangerous place, because your paycheck depends upon you doing the wrong thing. And we have a nice little tribute story for you to talk about the little incarceration problem that we have from all these victimless crimes. Take it away, boys.
Convict sentenced to generating 80 to 100,000 in profits for private prison. After being tried and convicted of armed robbery and two counts of aggravated assault, local 24-year-old Elijah Rudin was officially sentenced Friday to generating 80 to 100,000 in profits for privately held Crowley County Correctional Facility. Quote, the defendant is hereby ordered to create a minimum of 80,000 in net profits at a minimum security prison owned and operated by the Core Civic Corporation, unquote, said Judge Gary Mueller, adding that Rudin will be processed the following day at Crowley County Prison, where he will remain incarcerated until he has produced at least a 1.25% increase in Core Civic stock valuation. Quote, I believe this sentence is an appropriate punishment given the nature of Mr. Rudin's crimes, the harm caused to his victims, and the fact that Crowley County Prison will qualify for a generous government stipend for housing a minimum number of inmates per the term of Core Civic's contract with the Colorado Department of Corrections. I sincerely hope, Mr. Rudin, now you fully understand the consequences of your actions, unquote. Mueller went on to clarify that Rudin will eventually be eligible for parole on a condition of good quarterly earnings.
Ah, so prisons, another cost program for the tax cattle. Dry. Thanks for listening, everybody. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. Thank you, Jeremy and Phil.
Thank you.
Well, worms. Thank you, Lou.
Worms.
Worms.